Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for those folks who do the needle arts. We have an unusual Wednesday show in that we have a guest, other than Beth or Jennifer or Cindy or whatever. But Gayanne Rogers is with us. Gayanne, welcome.
Thanks, Gary. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. So we're going to spend a good portion of the time today talking about the new Mystery in Saint-Tropez project that we're starting with Gayanne. This show and the Saint-Tropez project, sponsored by Kathy Ray and the Needle in the Haystack folks. So Kathy has put together all the thread and canvas for the project. And, of course, we've talked about Kathy and Needle in the Haystack so many times. She's done several thread talks with us, and it is absolutely your source for all manner of needlework supplies from the common to the very unusual. So check that out at needlestack.com. Thanks to Kathy for sponsoring, and Kathy was going to be with us today, but she's two employees short, so she couldn't do it. But she'll be with us tonight, Stitch Hour, and Gayanne will be back for that. And we're going to tonight look at photos and talk about photos of the Mystery in Saint-Tropez project. So you'll get a double hit of this project and get to see what how it all works and what it looks like. And then we'll also get to study the various thread combinations that Kathy has put together for us. And she'll be here to talk about all that. So more of this tonight on the Stitch Hour. That's at 8 o'clock Eastern time on the YouTube channel. So don't miss out. Sunday, our guest will be Lauren Yeager from the San Francisco School of Needlework and Design. Lauren, an accomplished needle artist. Let's go with needle artist. But also get to talk some more about what's going on at the San Francisco School. So that'll be fun on Sunday. Other than that, we're doing nothing. All right, so let's just dive into this thing and talk to Gayanne about the Mystery in Saint-Tropez project. And she's put this together. This is an excellent learning project that you put together. Not a big one. If you've never done counted canvas work, this is a really great opportunity to get involved, have plenty of hand-holding. So if it's something new for you, give it a try. Let's see. We got charts you can get at GayanneRogers.com. And then the thread kits you can get from Needle in a Haystack, needlestack.com. So the combination of those two will get you all armed. And, of course, you're welcome to use your own stash if you want to. But let's just start at the beginning, Gayanne. Where did this idea come from? What's behind this? How do we learn from this? Give us the rundown.
Enough questions. A friend suggested it to me years and years and years ago. This is the fourth one I've done, but I haven't done one since 2008. And she had a different concept, and I changed it. Her concept was just that I present something where you don't know where you're going, just step by step. I decided that there would be more to it if I tried to make a little design project out of it. And the way I look at it is anything works with it. It's been amazing. I didn't know this in the beginning. No matter what you put together, as long as you stay consistent, it works out. So it's a little non-threatening way of playing designer. It's simple colors, simple stitches, and then they just mix up in different ways. And it's in the mix that it all changes. And sometimes I've seen some of them from my earliest ones. I didn't know it was mine. I've seen them in shows. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. That's an interesting geometric. I wonder who did that. Me. But people, if you really get going on it, it has so many different levels. You can combine. You can do what I did. You can add to what I did. You can delete off what I did and do something else. Once you get started, it sets it all up for you. And I think sometimes with needlework projects, the hardest thing is just that first step. So I decided it was time to do. I was fed up, actually, if you want to know the truth. I was fed up with people who were wired if they didn't do stitch by stitch what I did. So I thought, you know, I think it's time to revisit a mystery and get everybody stirred up again to where they bring some of themselves to it instead of just absolutely automatically, mindlessly reproduce what I did.
But that's the key element of this, because it's just a relatively small geometric. And really not I mean, there's a nice little challenge to it, but it's not overwhelming. But it's a way to expand, to open your mind a little bit and play around and not do that in the context of something that's going to take you a year to stitch.
I think that the problem with my generation of teachers, and I know why we did it, because we had teaching circumstances that needed us to prepare thoroughly for the classes, the Guild classes. But we did things. What I see in today's needlework is the interest is entirely in how many stitches you can use and how many threads you can use. And the design concept, I mean, it is a design concept, gets lost, sometimes buried in all this stuff. So I thought, what do you do that takes and shifts some of the emphasis back on a design? And this is one of the ways I decided to do it. All you have to do is choose and then just stitch your choice. It will work out. But along the way, it's my hope that you will see ways that you can modify it a little bit so that I think I have three proofers. And if you look at one of them, Sue, I don't know, are you going to we can't show them, can we?
No, there'll be photos.
Sorry
we'll have photos,
about that. Yeah. There's one of them when we get to the photo, when the photos show, where Sue did a little design of her own. She took off one of the ornaments and put it on the big piece. Big isn't relative. Big is totally relative, I know. But she had a little flower motif, and she added that. I hadn't thought of that. It was a neat idea. And I've had people in the past add more border to it. There should be room on the canvas. If you want to add a square, fancy border all around it, you can. And it's not hard to do. There's nothing difficult. There's nothing difficult, frankly, in most of what I do these days. I used to do difficult, but I forgot how to do it now.
So take us
so
through.
I do easy.
If I'm a complete beginner,
yes.
You know, I've never done it. I've never done counted canvas.
Have you done any stitching? That's my first question.
Okay, well, but take us through this. How do I approach this as a beginner?
Okay, there's a picture that shows a center. The center on everybody's is fixed. You stitch up at one, down at two, exactly what I did in the center. You have to choose your colors, but Kathy did that for you if you wish. She did it really skillfully, but I'll talk about that in a minute. You just start up at one, down at two, follow my directions page by page. And what you end up with is a little center square and a set of arms that go out from the square. And then when you get those finished, then you begin your little mystery trip. So you look through the options in the instructions and you think, oh, I think I like that one. And so you try it the same way, up at one, down at two, up at three, down at four. And then you think, I wonder if I should stop here. Maybe I should add this, and I give you another part to consider. And then you finish it. You think, okay, I liked adding that, but I still don't feel it's finished. Okay, you add part three. And you come out with a design that can either be ragged edged, that's the beginning, you know, without a clean line that binds it. You can have a chamfered edge, which makes an eight-sided design, or you can have a square design, or you can have something that's somewhere in between if you just delete some of what I did. And there are three different corner possibilities. And then for each of those three corner possibilities, there are three possibilities within that. So you could have one of nine different designs, all in this one little pattern, all very simple stitching. There's nothing, I mean, you can't really have somebody concentrate on the design and on difficult stitching if they've never done it before. So the stitches are so basic.
Right.
I'm thinking there's nothing hard at all. Choosing colors, Kathy chose your colors, how you distribute them. That's a bit of a challenge. But, you know, it's easy to try. And what you find out is there's this whole creative little journey that you could have spent your whole lifetime stitching and never gotten. And I don't know how people get hooked. I always say that there are two parts to stitching. There's how to do it. You know, learn this stitch, that stitch, learn about this thread, learn about that thread. And then there's what to do with it once you know how to do it. And if it were up to me and I just had how to do it, I'd have lasted 6 months maybe at the most. I'd have been bored. So, but that's me, I realize. It's the what to do with it. So that I always said, put me on a desert island, give me 5 threads and 10 stitches and one size of canvas, all I needed. And I could stay entertained for 10 years with just never leaving those stitches, never leaving those colors. And that's basically what this mystery does. It just mixes up things.
Yeah. Two things. One is I'm glad we're still doing stitching in numerical order, you know, up at 1, down at 2. You know, that's encouraging that we haven't gone and done something weird there. But
I can do weird there, but I haven't done it in
this. No, don't. But I think that the other part of testing, you know, once you do the center and then you work on the outer quadrants, however big you choose to make them, it's also an opportunity to try. Like if you say, hey, I think I like this one. And you stitch it and you're not so excited about it, you know, this is an opportunity. You have other choices. Rip it out and try something else.
Once you get what I call those legs, the dividing bands in, and I asked my proofers to make sure that people had enough thread. When you're doing something that is a set piece, in other words, you're reproducing what I did, if you're doing a piece of mine, then you can come closer to the number of threads you need. When you're off on a little creative binge like this, and you may change your mind, you need quite a bit of thread. Once you feel comfortable about the amount of thread you have, and I think there's enough, then what you could do is you could say, you know, I like both of them and I can't make up my mind. Let me start a quarter in one quadrant and try this. Let me try in the other and try this and see which I like the best.
Right, yeah. Because it gives you that
and then
option.
You can rip it out. And then you can rip it all out in a matter of, it's on 18 mesh canvas and they're big stitches. I mean, it's meant to take you away from up at 1, down at 2, and teach you, look at what I can do. It's so exciting. I don't know what's going to happen. And if I could, can I tell one story?
Well, if you can fit it in an hour and a half, sure.
I can fit it in about 5 minutes, I think, maybe not even that long. I did a big piece. It's one of my favorite pieces I've ever done. It's called The Passage of Time, and it's a sampler that I did dedicated to my father. And when I started it, I don't start with much of a drawing. And a friend of mine who said to me, let me see that drawing. So I showed her the drawing, which I usually don't do. So at the fast forward, and I finished the piece, and I asked her if she wanted to go out to lunch and take it to the framer. So she said, okay, let me see the finished piece. This is another needlework teacher. And so I showed it to her, and she said, you know, Gideon, you really messed this up. You didn't do what's on the drawing. I said, well, no. She said, did you intend to just let it go? And I said, absolutely. It has a mind of its own. It stitches itself after a while. It delivers messages to me. Do this, don't do that. That looks terrible. And it comes, I never know what it's going to look like at the end. I like living that way. A lot of people don't. I understand it. But the thrill of not knowing what's going to happen and how it's going to come out is what keeps me going.
Well, there is a comfort in paint by number. There's no question about that. But
yes, there is.
And I think what I like about this is it's a handheld way of breaking out of that.
It's just a little baby step out.
Yeah. Yeah, the risk is quite low. And the fact that it's on 18 mesh canvas, that canvas will take a heck of a beating. You can tear it out and put in new stuff all day long, and it'll be fine.
Here's the secret to it. Anything you do, if you pick a set number of colors, like Kathy has shown you, if you pick those colors and you just start, everything you do, because it's a set number of colors and a set number of different patterns that give you a little interest, almost anything you do is going to be interesting. Now, that's not true in real design life. You can flunk. Let me tell you, I do it daily. But on this sort of thing, what you're doing is you're just taking a set number of ideas and you're juggling them so that what you get keeps it real exciting. And I've never seen one. I've seen some of them I personally like better than others, but I haven't seen one in all the 4 I've done where it isn't interesting, where the result isn't interesting.
I think it's interesting. You haven't actually stitched this.
I have stitched it as a doodle.
Okay.
I stitched a corner and I stitched on another piece, I stitched another corner, and I stitched a middle, and I cut out a Xerox of the middle and held it on the top of the corner to see what it looked like. And I never stitched it. I didn't purposely, because my audience is such that people who usually stitch my things like paint by number. And if I do it one way, that's the only right way to do it.
Right.
If you don't make it stitch by stitch like I make it, then you're wrong. And oh my God, you got to, you know, rip it out and start over again. And I'm trying to break part of the value of this is I'm trying to break people of the habit of doing this. I'm trying to break them into, oh gosh, I made a mistake. Well, maybe the mistake I made is really interesting. Let's have a look at it. That's how half mine get invented.
Yeah.
I'm doing a piece right now where I didn't do. I tried drawing drawings ahead of time, and I didn't like any of them. So I thought, well, why don't I just start? I'm starting with this. I'm going to do it, and when I get finished with this, I'll try something else. See how it works out. It's dangerous.
So this, you just gave me an idea here, in that approaching the Saint-Tropez thing. You could actually just take a bigger piece of white canvas and mount that, and then just stitch the different quadrants, the center, just monkey around, not in any order, not in any placement, and just see what you like, and then go to the main piece of canvas and put it together.
That is absolutely, that's how I work. I work on a doodle, and then when I get something I like, I put it on the real canvas. That's the way I work. Oh, if I'm doing something complex, something like this. It is so basic a pattern that there's, I think the advantage for those who really want a challenge is you can stick with the corners the way I did them, the ragged edge, the small one, the medium one, or the large one. Somebody somewhere along the line is going to say, I like this part of A, but I like this part of B. And so there's a challenge that's a bigger challenge in it, but it doesn't have to be a challenge.
Right.
Right.
Does that make sense? Do I mind making sense? I hope I
am. So you could, because when I see some of these, I keep thinking some of the parts of the design, I keep thinking, oh, what if I pulled the canvas real tight and made a hole, you know, making it more like an eyelet.
Yes.
Or if I put beads in there instead of the stitching.
Yes.
I like this section. I like that. Maybe add something else to it. It does lend itself to doing that.
It is so very simple, basic, that it lends itself to that. You can turn it, you can make it very easy to do, or you can turn it into a pretty big challenge. And I did not want to have anybody telling me, I didn't want you asking me, well, which one did you do? So I just did none of them. I just doodled my way through it. And when I doodled my way through it, I thought, okay, well, I'll ship it off to my tried and true proofers and see what it looks like. And that's how I found out.
Did they give reaction to you?
Yeah, they did. Oh, yes, they did. But what I like about their three is that they're so different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't, except for the center, they don't look like the same piece.
No.
That's, they're all different. That's what's the neat part about it. So I like that. If I had to choose one, I couldn't choose one because what I like is the difference. And you can integrate. The colors you choose are going to change it enormously. And I thought, do you want to talk first? Can we stop for a minute about this and talk about Kathy's colors? Because I have some commentary on those.
Before you do that, though, just for everyone,
okay.
On the YouTube version of this, all of the photos will be in the video, the still photo video thing. But I will make a slideshow at wetalkfiber.com for this podcast. I'll make a slideshow of all the photos that we have. The different versions that Gayanne's stitching people did, and then all the colors Kathy put together. So you can go to wetalkfiber.com and go through the slideshow or watch the video and see all the photos so you can see what we're talking about. And then tonight on the Stitch Hour, that's what we'll focus on. We'll show the photos, and then Gayanne will take us through, and we'll talk about the colors and interaction and show those kinds of things. So there'll be plenty of ways to see these photos.
I think the interesting, I love Kathy's color sense. I think they are terrific. I bought two of them. I'm not going to make the mystery, but I bought two of them just because I love the colors. I think a lot of shopkeepers, if I could send a message to shopkeepers, you know what it would be to have a color combination of the month. I walked into a shop one time when I was, you know, traveling around teaching for the guild, and somebody clever had a color selection of the month, and I bought the whole thing just because I like the colors. She mixed them up in a really, really neat way. So I would like to, and I think that's what Kathy does and just excels. So Kathy's got all these colors, and I want all of them, but I chose two and ordered them. Just, I absolutely could not resist. But what I'm going to do is put the two together. So there's that element too.
Right. So even if you order, like, let's say you like one of the specific colorways and you get it and you're like, oh, well, maybe I really want... like I love the red ones, but maybe you think, oh, you know, it's awfully red. So you add, you pull from your stash and you pull something else in, and
right,
it would change it.
It would just totally change it. Now, when she sent them to me, you know, and I put them on my website, they're all on my website at the bottom. If you scroll down now, I featured them two a day. And when I came, I don't remember whether the purple came first or the red came first, but they came together, I thought. I remember that. I thought, oh, these two cry out to be put together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just do. Absolutely cried out to me, put these two together and then pull some lights from your stash. And there's that element. You can just plug yourself in and use the watercolors for this and the solid for this. Exactly, and it will come out fine. For somebody more adventuresome, Beth, for you. You know, you need a whole bunch and you need to mix them up. You need to have the challenge of trying to sort out the colors.
Yes, absolutely.
You told me that you were eager to start down this path. And yes. I thought it was a really good path. And it's not a whole lot of job to rip out. Something you've done, if it makes it better, you get all excited because you found out that doesn't work and this will be better, and you keep trying. Sometimes you have to try a lot. Sometimes you get it on the first. That's all part of the creative process too. I'm trying to take this out of the paint by number. Paint by number is fine. I'm not striking anybody away by paint by number. But I would like to see you mix up a little bit so that when you did your paint by number, you think, you know, I really don't like that orange there. I'm going to try this instead. And you try it. You can always rip it out. I know, rip, but you do. If for me, well, ripping is this part of life. You know, that's a bigger part than stitching.
I always run into people who say, oh, because I'll say, oh, this is, I've got to rip this section out. And they're like, you're ripping it out. And I'm like, well, it's wrong. It's bothering me. It's got to come out. I can't. I've looked at it long enough. I can't fix it. It's got to come out. And they're just horrified. They're just horrified that I do it. And I'm like, you know, it needs to be done. It'll be fine.
You know,
but sometimes you don't, though. I think sometimes on your pieces, it's good because you have the four quadrants. So let's say you're working on a section, you're like, I'm not so sure I like that. You're right. You can go down to a different quadrant and try it a different way and then decide which way you like it better.
You can, in some ways, in the very first stitches, the adventuresome person would set up all three of the options, see which one she started to like the best, and then borrow from the others and correct, make something that's totally different. But I think the emphasis should be on mystery. And do you know why it's named Mystery in Saint-Tropez?
No, but how about if you tell us? That would be pretty cool.
I will. I'll tell you. Saint-Tropez is the watercolors I used.
Oh.
That's it. That was the name of the watercolors I
there
liked.
There you go. See, I thought it had something to do with some exotic vacation you took.
No, and it was going to be summer. And I thought, well, that's good.
Yeah.
But I think that you can start out, if you are new to it, let's return to that for a second. If you're really new to it, just look at the options and choose it and follow it and see what it looks like. It's an adventure to see. I promise it's an entry level. I'm trying to remember. I haven't got it here right here. As I remember it, it's almost an entry level counted pattern. There's just nothing difficult on it. And if you make a mistake, okay, now I have one example to give you. I just did this. I'm working on a new piece. And I had me working with yellows. So I had two yellows that were close together, and I was mirror imaging them, and I got one yellow on one side and one yellow on the other side. I thought, well, that isn't right. So I just reversed it for the mirror image and left it. Down below, there's more, so I just reversed it again. So I made a pattern out of the mistake. Sometimes when you do something, if you don't panic and you stop and think about, what is it here I've done? I've done something wrong. Well, how can I make it right? If I did this, would it make it right? And sometimes I've come up with my most interesting things that way, just by making a mistake. So, and it opens up because nobody's judging you on what you're doing. There aren't any needlepoint police. And you can't look at it. Somebody else isn't going to look at it and say, that's not right. Well, it says, this is right to me.
Right.
And I think that we are so hidebound by what's right and what's wrong. And there is no real right or wrong. It's just whatever you like.
Yeah, I'm hoping out of this that we'll hear from some people who are making this their first county canvas.
That would be fun, and it would be a good creative way to start. And so if I could just make one other comment. Do you know, people have asked me, I haven't taught for a long time now, but when I was teaching all the time, I wasn't teaching beginners. And somebody asked me, if you were to teach a beginner, how would you teach them? And do you know how I would teach them? No. If you're a rank beginner, first time you ever picked up a needle, I would have you choose two pearl cottons that you liked and a big mesh canvas. And then I would teach you two things. I would say, okay, here's how you do a slanted stitch, and here's how you do a straight stitch. Now, so let's see what you do. Oh. And that's all.
Just simple.
Because think of so many stitches are slanted, and so many are straight. And think of all the variations within this. There are other variations too, but you could keep yourself busy for a long time just dealing with straight stitches or just dealing with slanted stitches, and then you learn how to mix the two.
Mm-hmm.
So this is my, but I can't do that because nobody will do it. So that's out the window. Mystery in Saint-Tropez is my attempt to open up and try and show you that along with wonderful stitching, tension and everything else, there's this little thing called creativity.
Yes.
And what you do becomes really exciting. At least it is for me. As I said, I'd quit without it.
Okay, so the you did a pre-sale on your website for the chart.
And then
you took it down, and now it's back.
So it's back.
As we start this, so people can go to GaianRogers.com and buy the chart and all the instructions. And then you also have instructions for finishing into ornaments there. Is that correct?
The ornaments, could we talk about the ornaments for a minute? I made them.
Lead-in to talk about the ornaments.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got to get better at doing this. I made the ornaments. You can buy the pattern, or you can buy the ornaments, or you can buy the two. The ornaments to me are a way to start. The little one you can do in very little time. It just gives you a chance to try something in some colors. So my idea was you could try it in the colors you chose to see what the mix looks like. It's just it's like a doodle that you can make something out of. The finishing, you can make a back if you want, and then you put the two together. And the finishing takes 20 minutes max. And you're finished. You cut it out, and you running stitch it together, and that's all there is to it. You put a little hanger on it. But it gives you a chance.
I love that. I love that when people say finishing takes 20 minutes, an entire weekend for me, and it's still
no, no. It's you cut out and you do running stitch, and that's it.
Okay.
Put two sides together, and you do running stitch in and out, and they put a little hanger on the top through it, and that's it.
Okay, I'm making a note right now.
Or you can leave. You can just do the front and back it with. You can cut out some felt or some ultra suede and just tack it on the back. Mm-hmm. Just in top, in the quadrants, tack it. It's finished. I can't finish to save my life. So if I give finishing instructions, it means it's simple, not hard. But the ornaments, I think, give you a chance to. Val did a really good one. She did a really interesting one. That was my favorite one. She started with light with the accent colors being dark, and then she did the reverse. The background was dark and the accent colors were light, and then she put the two of them together so you turn it over. So it's got a back and a front, and on one side the colors are, it's dark to light, and on the other side it's light to dark. And I thought that was a really interesting idea. I have an assignment that I would like to talk about to do with the ornaments, which is, here's an old design exercise. Pick out, Gary, what color do you hate most?
Green.
Green. Okay. Beth, what color do you hate most?
Oh, yellow.
Okay. Gary, you take green. Beth, you take yellow. All right. Your assignment is try out all the different colors. Just, you know, spread them out and try them out until you love green, Gary, and Beth, you love yellow. It's doable. It's an old design exercise. Take the color you hate and keep putting colors with it until you think, oh, gosh, that's wonderful. Look at that. It works.
All right. So what you're saying is, okay, wait. I got to back you up. So okay. What I'm doing is I'm taking DMC, and I'm taking all the colors of the rainbow, including yellow. And then I'm just kind of putting them next to each other, you know, taking shades. And
remember, there's value.
Right.
Too.
Right.
There's light to dark change. There's the color, and there's the texture. So it depends on what yellow you choose. It depends on what you choose to go with it. And little amounts change it. Big amounts change it. So what you do is you take the color you think, I really just dislike this intensely. And you go to your stash and you just keep heaping things on it, trying them. Just trying them next to them. Try a lot, a big hunk of blue next to it. Try a purple next to it. That's the yellow purple opposites on the color wheel. And just keep trying amounts and trying textures until it becomes probably an accent for you. And you think, you know, that's just what that needed.
Right.
It's just an old design exercise. It's an old design class exercise. And it works. It's just interesting. So that the ornaments, I had that in mind with the ornaments too. I had in mind that you use the to audition the piece, but also to use up bits of pieces from your stash. All it takes is a little piece of canvas and you make an ornament out of it. And you've learned a lot about color doing it, texture.
Yeah.
Am I staying on the topics you want me to? I hope I am.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, no, that's where I'm kind of stuck on getting a bigger piece of canvas, just some white canvas, and just stitching the components, just throwing them down and seeing what I like. I think that's going to be my approach.
I think that's a wonderful approach. I mean, that's basically what I do.
Yeah, I think that would be fun to play with.
And I like what Val did, using a dark canvas, because that was what she changed, the background. Correct.
She changed the background. So she started with a dark green canvas on one. And I don't remember, you know, I haven't got them right here.
Right.
One is dark. And then she brought it to life with the value lights. And then the other one was light background. Now, she said she had to do the nun stitch around it in the same color so that she could put it together.
Yeah, but that's easy. And the nun stitch isn't hard to do.
No, and that's all you do, Gary, is nun stitch, and then you running stitch the nun stitch two pieces together. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not hard, Gary. We can do it. But that's what intrigues me. So if you put the dark.
Okay, Beth.
I'm looking at the colors, and I'm thinking, okay, how much does it change on the color of canvas? So the way she shows the, you know, the colors on the bottom. So you've got like pumpkin A and B. But if you changed, especially pumpkin B, to a black canvas, that would scream Halloween. And then maybe, and then she's got the green in there with the vineyard silk color. And I'm thinking, okay, so if you added, you know, that would be really Halloween-y, even if you changed like the, and then I think the reds, if you changed that to a black canvas. Or if you changed it to an all-white canvas, a Victorian red A, if you changed that to a totally white canvas and then did it on a red canvas. I mean, how much would that change? Because reds are the same.
It would change it. It would change it enormously. And it's just that kind of thing that I hope people pick up with this. Just experiment. Mm-hmm. Kathy's given you wonderful palettes to work with.
Right.
You know, she's chosen wonderful combinations.
I was glad she gave so many options, too.
And she did, and it must have taken her a really long time to
do. Yeah, that too.
I mean, so it's not easy. It's not easy to put color together, and a lot of it's just experience and experiment. And even when you think, you know, there are two color. Do you know there are two color rules to remember? Do you know what they are? They're just two. You don't have to know anything else.
Okay.
These are the only two you live by. I learned them from a wallpaper designer. Color changes according to what you put it next to. And color changes according to, number two is the color changes according to the amount you use.
Okay.
That's all you ever have to remember about color. As long as you keep that in mind, so you think, you know, this white isn't working well on this red. Okay, well, double it then and see what happens.
Oh.
Double the quantity, double the spread. If you're going to use one stitch of white and one ply, try three ply the one stitch. If it doesn't work, add two more stitches and watch what happens to the color mix both underneath and on top. It changes a lot. And the same is true for what you use it with. You just record now. You know, the catch to this is that everything's infinite, so you don't know what you're going to do.
Right.
That's the mystery of it all. That's why it's mystery. But I would love it if some people who were newbies tried it, because it would start them out with a different attitude towards stitching, I think.
Yeah.
There's room. I have no objections to paint by number. I wouldn't have a business if there weren't paint by number. But it's the mix of the two, so that you kind of, you know how people do revolutions? If you had a revolution with a creative piece, and then you did a set piece, and then you check back and forth, some of the creative part might wander over into the set piece, and vice versa.
Your brain would start, it just starts working different. Sometimes, I know you said when you're stressed, you work more difficult pieces. And I find I'm the opposite. If I'm more stressed, I work on simple pieces. But after a while, that relaxes me enough. And then I think, my mind starts working and I think, oh, that complex piece that I couldn't get. Oh, now I've got an idea and I can go work on.
I think that's a really valid point. I like the idea. Do you know there's an old concept of living in the here and now? Do you know that you don't look at the past, you forget about the future, you just live in the moment. It's an old, I don't know who else did it, but I learned it from Joseph Campbell. And I think if you are in the middle of something really technically difficult that also has an element of the creative in it, you are really living in the here and now. You are living in this moment because there's not room in your brain to think about anything else.
Right.
That's why I like complex. But Beth, you're right. If you get one easy, always juxtapose. I think you juxtapose everything. You work on something that's easy, work on something that's hard at the same time and go back and forth. Work on something that's on big canvas, work on something that's little canvas and go back and forth. Work on something that's small, work on something that's large, and do them together so that you get both experiences at once. Now, I say that and I only ever work on one piece at a time. I can't concentrate on two. I get lost. I do look at everything else. I have lots going, but I work on one. And then I look to see what I did on the other one, see if there's anything that'll help me figure out my problems with the one I'm working on. I'm not, you know what, you should know I've been on this program often enough. I'm not a very conventional stitcher.
That's why we like you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a different journey. It's just and I don't like people telling me, I don't like people saying to me, so-and-so didn't do your piece right. She didn't do it like you did it. I said, good for her.
Yeah. Okay, so this whole Saint-Tropez thing, then, I think we've established, is set up so that you can experiment and you're encouraged to experiment. Both with color and design. But
yes.
Now, what do you do, Gayanne, to stretch yourself creatively?
Something as hard as I can do.
Okay.
As I just did it. I want you to know I stitched a tiny portrait, 3 inches by 2 inches, of Susan B. Anthony.
3 by 2 inches on what? Congress cloth?
On Congress cloth. I think it's 3. It might be 4 by 3. It's one of. It's small. Okay.
And you got a face out of that? Wow.
I had to make it look like Susan B. Anthony. Do you know how many hours it took me?
No.
80.
Oh my.
I was determined to do it. Usually I'd give up and throw it out, but I was determined to do this. I had an idea for a sampler, and that's what I'm doing now is I'm making yellow flowers. The two I did a friendship sampler between Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony. And it was about the women's movement. It was about a friendship of 50 years. And down the center of it says that all men and women are created equal, and then it has little tiny portraits of them. And with Susan B. Anthony was the hardest thing. It was probably the hardest thing I think. I was just determined to do it. So it took me 80 hours, and then it took me, then I got it to the point on doodles. Then I stitched it. It took me another day. It took me a day and a half to stitch it. That was it. It took me 80 hours to figure it out. You asked.
That's all right. So you just, if you need to stretch yourself, then you just go right to the limit of difficulty.
I can't do difficult all the time when I want to stretch. Afterwards, I need something like Mystery and Saint-Tropez now. I had it with hard. I'm sick of hard. I did it. But it is more of the same. It captures you, and you get so fed up. I've thrown things and everything else. I stitched her. The reason I knew how many hours it was that I stitched her, I think it was 8 or 9 times. And I kept getting closer, and I'd rip it out in the morning, and I'd think, oh, God, how do I do this? I got there, and I'm happy. The best one I did of all of them is the one that's on my final canvas, and that makes me happy. But I'm not stitching if I screw up this canvas. I am not stitching this thing again. But I find that for me, the challenge is not the stitch. It's choosing the stitches, but it's not knowing how to do difficult stitches. The challenge for me is I have this vision in my head and I want to do this. Now, how can I get it on a piece of canvas? Mm-hmm. And preferably on the smaller piece of canvas, the harder it is. You see, if I'd drawn a face that was, you know, a whole bunch of, I had 26 stitches across. That was it.
For a face.
For a face, for the whole face, from her ear to the tip of her nose is 26 stitches. To get warmed up for this, I did another project called Tiny Flora. I did 4 tiny floras. They're all the same, and they all look different because of my tension, because of the color choices, and I struggled with them. They were terrible. I allowed myself, I think it was either 12 stitches across from earlobe to nose tip. It's a profile, and it was just hard. I like that kind of, I like doing that. If I had 6 times the meshes, it's a quarter of the work.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is off the topic of.
No, that's right. What percentage of designs see the light of day? Do you have a large percentage that just go on the cutting room floor, as they say?
I have some of them at the end. I don't have a lot because generally I rip. I'm going to tell you this. I was teaching a class. You know, I used to work for the guilds. And I was teaching a guild class, and I said to somebody that I knew and liked and knew what she was capable of, I said very gently to her, Beth, this is harking back to something you started. I said to her, you know something? You've got these 3 rows. It's not as good as you can do. Why don't you rip them out? And it was a friend of mine. And she looked at me in abject horror, and she said, rip out 3 whole rows? And I said, you wuss. I said, I just finished out ripping the top half of a large sampler because I didn't like the way it had come out. I had a choice between starting it over or ripping out the top half, and I chose ripping out the top half because on the bottom of it was laden with flowers done and overdyed, and I got them just right.
Yeah.
So I rip and rip and rip. I rip a lot. I know nobody's going to like hearing that. And people say, oh, gosh, Gan, you struggle. So I don't. It's just the way I work. But I don't have a lot. I have some, but not a lot. that I don't, that's my job, is to see what I, how can I get this to okay. And sometimes I don't. And sometimes, most of the time, I can get it to okay. Wonderful, wonderful is serendipity. Wonderful you get to every once in a while, and it's not often. But it's always there in your mind, and you think, oh, if I just try harder, I'll be able to get to wonderful. So I'd say most of it's mediocre. It's a, I keep it. And somebody, and occasionally, when if I sell it, I don't often sell the ones I don't like. But if I do once in a while, if somebody wants something or some friend of mine says you should write that and sell it, I do. And then somebody comes up with it and I think, oh, look what she did with it. She did such a wonderful thing. And then I get all excited about it all over again. So I only got to, I got to wonderful three times and that's it. And I've been stitching for 50 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I got to, okay, I got to what I call good. I get somewhere between okay and good most of the time. And then I get to horrible, and that sits around as an, I don't ever throw it away because I want an example of what I did wrong so I can keep thinking about how to fix it.
Right.
That's the power of needlework in my life. That's what I do.
Well, see, I think that's the way art is. Cause see, when I was doing photography and doing a ton of it, like every day for hours, and I have thousands and thousands and thousands of photos of all kinds of subjects. I have one photo that I can point to that there is flawless. You know, there's not a flaw.
That's it.
Yeah. And then I have a couple of others that are close, and the rest of them just fall into this big bucket.
Yep. That's me in needlework. I think that's anything creative. It just takes time. And it takes, and if you could got to perfect every time, you'd get bored because you think, oh, this is too easy. So it's the challenge part, isn't it? So don't you think every time you pick up a camera, Gary, don't you think to yourself, you know, the beautiful picture is right there. I just have to get there.
Yeah. Oh, sure. That's the thing.
That's the dream.
Yeah. But that's what I talk to people, you know, come to a landscape. Say you're on vacation, come to a landscape. Your first step is take a picture of the scene. Just capture the moment for the family slideshow in the evening sometime. But then start picking the scene apart. And within that is the photo. And you just keep shooting and shooting and just trying it, different angles, different light. You know, come back the next day and see. And that's when you said, you know, I come back the next day and I don't like it. You know, same thing with photography. Come back the next day in the morning or come back in the evening and it'll be completely different, and shoot and keep doing it, because in there is the one. You just got to find it. Yeah.
Okay. What's so different between photography and stitching?
Very little.
Exactly.
Very little.
Now, you know, I had set myself on a study course about 10 years ago. I told my husband I was going to do it, and I did it. I probably talked about it on a program of years before. I decided that I don't like shading in needlepoint. It always looks splotchy to me. And I thought, what do you do? What is a real artist, you know, like a painter artist, do about shading? And so I kept looking, and then, you know, I had developed a passion for Cezanne. And I developed the passion because he doesn't, if you ever look at his paintings, they're not shaded. What they are is blocks of color that make the illusion of depth. I don't know. It's just, you know, it just is all in a thing of its own. I decided I was going to study a course. I was going to stitch something, a small area. I was going to do what you just talked about. I was going to take a small area of Cezanne and see if I could learn from him about a block, what blocks of color and colors underneath colors and how they move could do. And I wondered if I could do it in stitching. And the first time I flunked, and then I tried another one. And the other one is the only, well, I have three pieces that I would have trouble. I look at, and you know what you think about your perfect photograph? I think this is the best game that you're capable of. Not perfect, but you got there.
Yeah.
And I lived for that moment. And I got there with this Cezanne thing I did. I got to understand. I understood about movement. I understood about depth. If you ever look at his paintings, it's remarkable. It's just absolutely remarkable. And when you look, when you translate, start thinking about it in terms of painting, you think, I mean, in terms of stitching, you think, you know, that's what we do if you really think about it. A stitch is a unit block of color. In a way, you go schmear with a paint. You can't do. So how can you make stitching be stitching and not imitation painting? And that's what I was after. And that's what I'm always after. So that outlines become a big deal and blocks of color become a big deal. And I learned, I never looked at my stitching again the same way. I took off 6 months and did this, and it changed the way I looked at stitching. It brought back a whole lot of basket weave into my life. I would say that you can't do my better stuff. You cannot do if you're not willing to spend a lot of time basket weaving. You can do a lot of my stuff without it, but it's like layering and painting. It becomes the bottom layer, and then you see the color through it, adds to certain things. That's what my queens were all about. I couldn't have done my queens if I hadn't done the Saison exercise. But this is off the subject, in that you'll see a little bit of it in the layering in Mystery and Saint-Tropez. There's just ever so slight, because a color goes on top of another, and then, of course, it changes both colors.
Right. Yeah.
And when I hear you all, both of you talk, I think what people are afraid to do is to take the time to experiment. They just want to, I think that's why people want just to paint by number. They're afraid to maybe take the leap and say, okay, I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, I'm going to try it again a different way. And both of you are describing that you kept coming back to what you were working on, looking at it a different way so that you could
get what you really wanted. If you don't grapple with some design issues in needlework, how do you grow?
I don't know.
But see, that's so okay. Because I was going to say, isn't that what it's for me? That's what it's all about. You want to get to a perfect piece, but it's that process of getting there and what you learn along the way.
That's what really matters.
That's the fun to me. And yes, I think you asked the question, is what do you do to grow? But then I would ask the second question. Do people, as a rule, want to grow? I mean, I think there's a group of stitchers who are just content just buying charts and executing them. But do you get to, does everybody get to a point where they want to grow? I need to do something more? That mental process is interesting to me.
I think that if you ask somebody, if you took one of the people and who stitched charts, just stitched them, stitched A, stitched chart 2, chart 3, stitched chart 4. You ask them for the time sequence. Look at what they choose. Okay, this is number 1, this is number 2, this is number 3, number 4. Your answer lies somewhere in their choices.
Okay.
Because you don't choose the same level of difficulty. What I think's missing in our world is that addition of beyond just knowing how to do more stitches and beyond knowing how to cope with more threads. It's back to that how do you do it versus what do you do with it once you know how to do it. And it's what I'm after. I'm not after for you to look at a blank canvas and start. I think it's too overwhelming. I think I am after saying to you, as you're stitching along, look for something that you like. And stitch that, stitch the part you like. But when you come to, and all stitchers do this, I wouldn't have chosen that green. I really don't like that color. Well, then why don't you just do it in something different?
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting you to try. Usually it starts with students. It starts with, I made a mistake and I just don't want to rip it out. Well, okay, if you don't want to rip it out, what can you do that makes it not a mistake? That's how the process usually starts. That was my experience. And the best stitch, I had a group of people that I got when I was traveling and teaching. I got them to the point where they could live with the mistakes and learn to build on them. And I think that that's the course where you get there. I did this wrong. Oops, I got to rip it out. Ask yourself, do you really have to rip it out, or are there the seeds of something interesting? I took a class recently and somebody taught me how to, I mean, not recently, before COVID. That was a long time ago now. And somebody gave me a stitch pattern and she said, here's a stitch pattern for this that I thought you might find interesting. And I said, oh, good. And I sat down. Of course, I made a mistake in the first three stitches I did. I thought, well, this is getting interesting. So she came by and she said to me, you know, that you're not following the pattern. You're not doing it right. And I said, I know, I'll do it right in a while. I'm like off in my little world of seeing what happens here because I did it wrong. I counted it first wrong, and I thought, you know, this is kind of interesting what happens here. But I have to tell you, I had an experience when I was really young and interested in not knowing where I was going, and I took a studio art class, and it changed the way I had an exercise, and the exercise was this. You went to it was a studio class, 5 hours on Saturday morning, and it was by a man who was crazy, just absolutely crazy and a wonderful artist. So he taught by assignments, and this assignment was, you went down to the lumber yard, you got 16 2-inch blocks, you know, like baby blocks,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you cut pictures out of a magazine. And with rubber cement, you pasted the picture on the blocks, and then you turned the blocks and pasted another picture, and then you turned the blocks and pasted another picture. This is a really amazing moment in my life. I spent 3 weeks and I don't know how many trips to the store to get more blocks because I could get the first picture to turn up right. I could get the second picture to turn up right, but I couldn't do it the third time. And then about the third or fourth set of blocks that I was trying to do this in, it dawned on me that the idea was to make new pictures, not to reproduce the old. And I never saw the world the same way again. It was like a life-altering moment, so that when I went and took a watercolors class with my husband, the teacher, who was a really wonderful teacher, went around the room and she said, what do you all do in real life? You know, it was a beginner class, first time. And I said, I'm a needleworker. Oh, she said, you're going to have trouble with this. We're going to have to loosen you up because you're going to be tight. And I said, I didn't say anything. But I thought, no, I'm not, because I learned that blocks lesson all those years ago. I always learned there's something new to be built out of something that's different. Anyway, this is probably too much for this, but I saw the world as a world of possibilities. What if I do this? What will happen? Well, you know what? Try it and see.
Yeah.
And it holds an enchantment that even just baby steps, bringing a little bit to it. Mm-hmm. You don't have to do a lot. There's nobody who says you have to go from, oh gosh, I'm going to get slapped on the wrist if I make one different stitch here, to I have a blank canvas in front of me, what I do with it. What you do is you ease into this gradually, and that's what my mystery is about, easing you in to hoping to tempt you just to say, what if I did this? What would it look like?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I see you ask me about what's the worst part of me? What's the least, what do I do worse of anything? Hurry.
What do you mean you hurry?
I stitch too fast. If I would slow down and think about it for a while, I would be a better technician. The best technician I know ever in my generation was Audrey Francini. I talk about that. I mention this all the time. She was that unusual person who had an unbelievable artistic gift. Most artists can't stand the discipline of technique in needlework. And most technicians are too uptight to be artists. And every once in a while, you find somebody who does it all. And she did it all. There's not a lot of about her work left. She died at 104, stitching up till the absolute last minute, from what I understand. But she was the she was that rare person who was a brilliant technician and a brilliant artist. And she was slow. I used to stitch with her at seminar. She was a seminar teacher. And I used to, she was a friend, and I stitched with her on days off. And I swear I could take 15, 20 stitches to every one that she could take. Only hers were perfect. Mine weren't. And I thought, the lesson of Audrey is slow down, Gan.
Well, all right, but why don't you? Because you know, I think anyone who looks at your work would say that your stitching is quite optimal. But why don't you? Is it because you're trying to get the idea on canvas and you don't have time to?
No, I can't stand not seeing what it looks like. So I hurry because I think, oh, this is a good idea. Hurry, Gan, find out what it looks like. Then go back, rip it all out, and do it decently. Only the rip out is never as good as the original. So I try and slow down. I think that's my biggest fault. That, and I think my greatest strength is that I don't have to make things out of hard stitches. I learned a long time ago, if you use an easy stitch and it can convey just as much as a hard stitch, why use a hard stitch? Sometimes the easier stitch looks better, but people like the challenge of hard.
Yes.
But it's fun. I think slowing, taking time so that, you know, Audrey paid me a great compliment and took a class from me one time, and she was sitting in the back of the room. This was the best needleworker, hands down, in my generation, to my way of thinking. And I was not by any matter of means alone. And she was sitting there, and she was the slowest stitcher. And the woman sitting next to her, didn't know who she was, said, are you struggling? Could you use some help from me? And Audrey turned to her, and in Audrey's understated way, she said, no, I'm fine. I'm just slow.
Yep. I'll get there. Yeah.
I get there, only I get there perfectly.
Right.
Yeah. She doesn't think it's perfect, but I never saw anything she did that wasn't. She knew, do you know what she got? She took all of the phases of Japanese embroidery. She was a surface stitcher. She took all of the phases of Japanese embroidery, and then she made them her own.
Yeah.
So that, did you ever know who Jennifer Taylor was?
No.
She was another Japanese, she taught Japanese embroidery too. And she said about Audrey, she said, you know what? Audrey knew exactly the millimeter to bring a line down that much more to make it right.
Hmm.
I mean, it's awesome. It's inspiring and awesome. And yeah. I'm not there and I'm never going to be there. And that's my problem.
All right. I think we'll end there.
Okay, will you edit some of this junk of mine out, please?
No.
I always think
it'll be wonderful.
I always think I make a fool of myself on these. I get all caught up in the moment.
No, we're keeping it all, including this. So, okay. All right, 8:00 Eastern time on the YouTube channel. Gan and Kathy will be with us, and so we'll get to talk about what went through her head, choosing the colors, and we'll look at the Saint-Tropez design, and you'll be able to see all the pieces that go into it. And in the audience, you can ask questions of Gayanne and Kathy, which is fun in its own right. So thanks for listening. Bye.